In 2003, the unthinkable happened in the small town of Imperial, Nebraska. 4-year-old Colton Burpo, son of local pastor Todd Burpo, nearly died from a ruptured appendix. But what followed his miraculous recovery stunned his family and eventually captivated millions worldwide. Heaven Is For Real became a publishing phenomenon, spending over 200 consecutive weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and selling over 10 million copies. The book's extraordinary appeal transcended traditional religious boundaries, resonating with readers across the spectrum of faith and skepticism. Even celebrities like Oprah Winfrey and Ellen DeGeneres discussed Colton's story on their shows, drawn to the simple, childlike descriptions of heaven that felt both fresh and familiar. What makes this account so compelling isn't just the supernatural elements, but the authentic voice of a small-town family wrestling with something beyond their understanding, a glimpse behind the veil that separates our world from what might lie beyond. The Burpo family's ordeal didn't begin with Colton's illness. For Todd Burpo, the months leading up to March 2003 had been a relentless series of physical and financial trials. It started during a softball tournament when Todd suffered a devastating leg injury, a spiral fracture of his tibia, and a snapped ankle that required months in a cast. Unable to work his garage door installation business, the family's finances quickly deteriorated as their savings evaporated. Just as Todd thought things couldn't get worse, excruciating kidney stones struck him in October, causing 3 days of agony. By November, doctors discovered a suspicious knot in his chest that biopsies indicated was hyperplasia, a precursor to breast cancer. His fellow pastors began calling him Pastor Job, referencing the biblical figure who endured a series of bizarre afflictions. During this difficult period, Todd experienced a moment of self-pity while struggling up church stairs on crutches. The thought crossed his mind, "God, I've served you faithfully. Why is this happening?" But he was immediately humbled when reminded of Christ's sacrifice. When the mastectomy revealed completely normal tissue, what Todd considered a little miracle, he believed his time of testing was finally over. By February 2003, Todd was walking again and feeling optimistic. The family planned a trip to Colorado as a celebration of their endurance through these trials. Little did they know that the greatest test still awaited them, one that would shake their faith to its core, but ultimately transform their understanding of life, death, and what might lie beyond. What's particularly striking about the Burpo story is how relatable their struggles are. Financial strain, health crises, and moments of spiritual doubt aren't unique to pastors. They're universal human experiences. The rawness of Todd's anger toward God during Colton's illness resonates because it's honest. Who hasn't questioned why bad things happen to good people, especially when children suffer? This foundation of authentic human struggle grounds what might otherwise seem an unbelievable supernatural account in the messy reality of everyday life. What began as a simple family getaway to Colorado quickly turned into a nightmare. 2 days before their trip, Colton fell ill with what appeared to be stomach flu, nearly canceling their plans. When his fever broke overnight, the family decided to continue with their vacation, visiting the Butterfly Pavilion outside Denver, where Colton even gathered the courage to hold Rosie the tarantula. That evening at Old Chicago Restaurant in Greeley, both children began feeling unwell again. Throughout the night at their hotel, Colton vomited every 30 minutes. By morning, while his sister Cassie was recovering, Colton's condition continued deteriorating. Despite considering local hospital options, Todd and Sonia decided to drive the 3 hours back to Imperial to see their regular doctor. During that journey, Colton's condition worsened dramatically. He cried constantly and continued vomiting. At the Imperial Hospital, x-rays revealed 3 dark masses, but doctors ruled out appendicitis based on his white blood cell count. Despite IV treatment, Colton showed no improvement. By the second day in the hospital, Todd recognized terrifying signs on his son, what he called the shadow of death. As a pastor who had witnessed death many times, he knew the telltale indicators: yellowing skin, labored breathing, and most alarmingly, the dark hollows forming around Colton's eyes. This sight hit Todd like a bullet. The decision to transfer Colton to Great Plains Regional Medical Center in North Platte came with its own trauma. When Todd picked up his son for the journey, he was shocked at how limp Colton's body had become. During the 90-minute drive, Sonia examined Colton's x-rays in the sunlight and began crying at what she saw, saying through tears, "We screwed up." Though they had followed medical advice at each step, they now feared they had made wrong decisions, and their son was suffering for it. The situation captures the helplessness parents feel when their child is seriously ill, the second-guessing, the guilt, the desperate search for solutions. Every parent can imagine the anguish of watching their child deteriorate while medical professionals struggle to identify the problem. This universal fear forms the emotional core of the story, making what follows all the more powerful. At North Platte's hospital, a radiologist finally identified Colton's condition, a ruptured appendix requiring immediate emergency surgery. In the surgical prep room, Colton screamed and thrashed as nurses tried to insert an IV, with his parents struggling to hold him still. When surgeon Dr. Timothy O'Halloran delivered the grim news, "Colton's appendix has ruptured, he's not in good shape," he offered no reassurance, only that they would try to clean him out. As Colton was wheeled away screaming, "Daddy, don't let them take me," Todd fled to a small room where he finally broke down. Alone, he raged at God. "Where are you? Is this how you treat your pastors? Is it even worth it to serve you?" Overwhelmed by the image of his son reaching out for him, Todd confronted the terrifying possibility that he might never see Colton alive again. "After the leg, the kidney stones, the mastectomy, this is how you're going to let me celebrate the end of my time of testing?" he yelled. "You're going to take my son?" 90 agonizing minutes later, a nurse appeared with hopeful news. Colton had survived surgery, but was screaming for his father. When they reached him, Colton was pale but alert. Later, while alone with his father, Colton made a startling statement. "Daddy, you know I almost died." What Todd didn't realize at that moment was that something extraordinary had happened during those 90 minutes. Though medical records would later confirm Colton had never been clinically dead during surgery, the little boy had apparently experienced something profound, something that would gradually emerge in the months and years ahead. For 17 days, Colton remained hospitalized, enduring a second surgery when an abscess was discovered, and suffering through severe constipation that left him writhing in pain. When a freak snowstorm prevented transferring him to a children's hospital, about 80 people from their church gathered to pray specifically for Colton's condition, including the unusual request that he pass gas. Within an hour, Colton began feeling better, and by morning, he was playing normally, leaving his doctor speechless at the transformation. This section of the story reveals the raw humanity behind pastoral leadership. Todd's rage against God dismantles the stereotype of the unshakable spiritual leader, showing instead a father driven to his breaking point. His confession to fellow pastors months later, that he had been furious with God yet still received an answer to prayer, offers a powerful message about authentic faith that transcends religious formality. 4 months after Colton's surgery, during a 4th of July trip, the Burpos began to understand that something extraordinary had happened to their son. When Todd teased Colton about returning to the hospital, the boy casually mentioned he'd gone up out of his body during his surgery. He described speaking with angels, sitting in Jesus' lap, and most convincingly, accurately described his parents' separate locations during his surgery. Todd alone praying in one room and Sonia in another room on the phone. This revelation made all of Colton's previous strange comments suddenly click into place. Over the following months and years, details of Colton's experience emerged gradually, often in casual conversation. He described heaven as a place where nobody's old and nobody wears glasses, where Jesus has markers, wounds, on his hands and feet, and where everyone has wings, though children's wings are smaller. He mentioned that everyone in heaven wore white robes with colored sashes, and that Jesus wears a white robe with a purple sash. Colton explained that in heaven, he did homework assigned by Jesus, his teacher. He described meeting many children there and said Jesus especially loved children, a message he repeated constantly after his return. Jesus really loves the children. When asked about God's throne, Colton described it as really, really big because God is the biggest one there is. He added that Jesus sits right next to God on his right side, matching biblical descriptions. Most surprisingly, he stated that the Holy Spirit sits on God's left side and is kind of blue. What makes these descriptions compelling is their combination of childlike simplicity with theological sophistication. Colton's accounts often aligned with biblical descriptions of heaven that he couldn't have known from his limited Sunday school education. Yet they retained the perspective of a four-year-old, focusing on details that would matter to a child, like Jesus's rainbow-colored horse, or the fact that angels sang his favorite children's songs, though they refused his request for "We Will Rock You." The gradual, organic way these details emerged, often prompted by everyday events rather than direct questioning, lends credibility to the account. These weren't rehearsed stories, but casual observations that surprised even his parents.
Perhaps the most emotionally powerful revelations from Colton's experience were those that connected to his family's history, details he couldn't possibly have known. In October, while Todd worked on a sermon at the kitchen table, Colton approached his mother and declared, "Mommy, I have two sisters." When Sonia suggested he meant his sister Cassie and perhaps a cousin, Colton firmly stated, "No, I have two sisters. You had a baby die in your tummy, didn't you?" Stunned, Sonia asked who told him this information. "She did, Mommy. She said she died in your tummy," Colton replied, adding, "It's okay. God adopted her." He described meeting a little girl in heaven who resembled Cassie but was smaller, with dark hair like Sonia's. The girl had repeatedly hugged him, which he found annoying. When asked about her name, Colton explained, "She doesn't have a name. You guys didn't name her." Most poignantly, he added, "She just can't wait for you and Daddy to get to heaven." This revelation began healing one of the most painful episodes in Todd and Sonia's lives, a miscarriage they had experienced before Colton was born, something they had never discussed with their children. For Sonia especially, the miscarriage had felt like a personal failure, despite knowing intellectually it wasn't her fault. Similarly, during a summer drive, Colton suddenly asked about Todd's grandfather, Pop, who had died 25 years before Colton was born. Colton startled Todd by speaking about Pop in present tense, saying, "He's really nice," and, "I got to stay with him in heaven." When Todd showed Colton a photo of Pop as an elderly man with white hair and glasses, Colton didn't recognize him. But when Todd's mother sent a photo of Pop as a young man from 1943, Colton immediately exclaimed, "Hey, how did you get a picture of Pop?" These family connections transformed Colton's experience from an abstract spiritual account into something deeply personal and healing. The specific details about his sister and great-grandfather, information Colton couldn't have known through normal means, provided his parents with comfort about loved ones they had lost.
Throughout Colton's recovery and the years that followed, he maintained a particular interest in how Jesus looked. Todd and Sonia would show him various paintings and images of Christ they encountered in hospitals, bookstores, and churches. Invariably, Colton would study each image and shake his head, saying, "The hair's not right," or "The clothes aren't right." In 2006, Todd received an email about a CNN report featuring Akiane Kramarik, a 12-year-old Lithuanian-American artist who began having visions of heaven at age 4. What made Akiane's case remarkable was that she came from an atheist home where God was never discussed. Yet at 4, she began describing heaven in detail. "All the colors were out of this world. There are hundreds of millions of more colors we don't know yet." Akiane's artistic talent was extraordinary, allowing her to paint her visions with remarkable skill. When Todd showed Colton Akiane's painting of Jesus titled Prince of Peace, Colton studied it intently. After a long moment, he nodded and said, "Dad, that one's right." The connection between these two children, from different backgrounds, different parts of the country, who had never met, yet described similar experiences, struck Todd as profound.
It suggested that what Colton experienced wasn't merely a product of his religious upbringing, but something more universal. This convergence of testimonies from children with vastly different backgrounds provides one of the most compelling aspects of the story. While a single child's account might be dismissed as imagination or religious conditioning, the similarities between unconnected children's experiences raise intriguing questions about what might exist beyond our physical reality. Not all of Colton's revelations were comforting. Some contained disturbing elements that surprised and concerned his parents. When Sonia casually remarked that heaven probably didn't have swords like in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe film they had watched, Colton firmly corrected her. There are two swords in heaven. When asked why swords would be needed in heaven, Colton replied with surprising intensity, "Mom, Satan's not in hell yet. The angels carry swords so they can keep Satan out of heaven." This theological concept, that Satan still has access to heaven but will eventually be cast out, aligns with biblical passages that Colton had never been taught. Even more disturbing was Colton's matter-of-fact announcement during a drive that there would be a war that would destroy the world. He described a battle where Jesus and the angels and the good people would fight against Satan and the monsters and the bad people. Most troubling to Todd, Colton calmly informed him, "I watched you. You have to fight too." When Todd asked what weapons he'd use, Colton replied he'd get either a sword or bow and arrow. Despite Todd's alarm, Colton reassured him, "Jesus wins. He throws Satan into hell. I saw it." Todd recognized Colton was describing the Battle of Armageddon from the biblical book of Revelation, complex apocalyptic imagery that hadn't been part of Colton's religious education. These darker elements of Colton's account challenge the stereotype of heaven as merely a place of peace and comfort. They suggest a cosmic struggle between good and evil that continues beyond our earthly experience, a perspective that aligns with many religious traditions but is rarely described in such concrete terms by a child. The Burbos first shared Colton's heaven experience publicly in January 2007 at Mountain View Wesleyan Church in Colorado Springs. Todd preached about doubting Thomas, relating it to his own crisis of faith during Colton's illness. The evening service was packed beyond expectations, with people standing in the aisles and spilling into the foyer. Todd and Sonia spent 45 minutes telling Colton's story, followed by another 45 minutes of questions from an engaged congregation who hung on every detail. Despite repeated encouragement from friends, fellow pastors, and congregation members to write a book, the family hesitated for years. The details of Colton's experience had emerged gradually over time, often triggered by everyday moments, a television show, a song, or a casual conversation. They worried about how reliving the intense emotional experience might affect Colton's psychological well-being and how public attention might impact their small-town son who was already dealing with local curiosity. The practical challenges of writing while managing their garage door business, Todd's pastoral duties, and raising three active children seemed insurmountable. When they finally decided to share their story more broadly, the experience fundamentally transformed the Burbos in unexpected ways. It shattered their self-reliance and taught them profound humility, leading them to accept help from others, something they had previously struggled with. Their faith deepened considerably, and they became more confident in sharing their beliefs with others. Todd's approach to ministry underwent a significant shift, particularly regarding children's programs. Colton's repeated message that Jesus really loves the children took on new significance, leading to expanded youth programs and a greater emphasis on children's spiritual development at their church. Meanwhile, life in Imperial, Nebraska, population 2071, continued its steady small-town rhythm. Cassie headed to high school, where she joined the volleyball team and choir. Colby started kindergarten, showing the same energetic personality as his brother. Colton entered sixth grade, maintaining his position as an honor roll student. Despite his extraordinary experience, Colton lived as a regular Midwestern kid who excelled at wrestling, played baseball on the local team, practiced piano, and joined the school band playing trumpet. though he still occasionally talked about heaven, usually in quiet moments with family or when asked specific questions, he remained grounded in his daily life. His sibling relationships stayed perfectly normal, complete with the usual squabbles over bathroom time, TV shows, and chores, followed by the typical reconciliations of family life. The impact rippled through their community as well. Their church saw increased attendance, particularly from families seeking answers about faith in the afterlife. Local study groups formed to discuss the theological implications of Colton's experience, and the Burpos found themselves frequently invited to speak at churches throughout Nebraska and neighboring states. When asked what he wanted people to know from his story, Colton replied without hesitation, "I want them to know that heaven is for real." This simple but profound statement became the family's mission, leading them to share their experience with an ever-widening audience while maintaining their small-town values and close-knit family bonds. At its core, Heaven is for Real isn't just about supernatural phenomena or religious doctrine. It's about hope. Hope that death isn't the end, that loved ones aren't truly lost, and that suffering has meaning beyond our earthly perspective. This message particularly resonates in an era where traditional faith often clashes with modern skepticism, offering a bridge between empirical experience and spiritual belief. For the Burpos, Colton's experience provided specific, deeply personal comforts, knowing their unborn daughter was waiting for them in heaven, understanding that Todd's grandfather was at peace, and believing that Jesus personally cares about their family struggles. These revelations transformed abstract religious concepts into tangible realities, offering detailed glimpses of their loved one's continued existence. The knowledge that their miscarried daughter knew about them and was waiting to meet them brought particular healing to a loss that many families struggle to process. What makes Colton's account compelling isn't just the supernatural elements, but the way they're grounded in human experience. His descriptions combine childlike wonder, Jesus's rainbow-colored horse, with profound theological insights, the Trinity, spiritual warfare, that seem beyond his years. They include both comforting elements, reunions with loved ones, the peace and joy of heaven, and challenging ones, future battles between good and evil, the reality of spiritual warfare. The consistency of his account, even when pressed with questions, adds weight to his testimony, especially given his age and limited religious education at the time. The narrative touches on universal themes that resonate across cultural and religious boundaries: the desire for reunion with loved ones, the hope for justice and meaning, and the longing for divine love and acceptance. Colton's descriptions of heaven, with its vibrant colors, music, and absence of pain, speak to deep human desires for peace and wholeness. His account of meeting historical figures and deceased family members he'd never seen photos of adds layers of verification that intrigue even skeptical readers. Whether readers approach the story with firm religious convictions, spiritual curiosity, or skeptical inquiry, Colton's experience offers a perspective that transcends simple categories. It suggests that reality might be more complex and interconnected than our material world indicates, that perhaps the veil between life and death, earth and heaven, is thinner than we imagine. His descriptions of heaven's physical characteristics and daily activities challenge both overly simplified and overly mystical views of the afterlife. In a world often dominated by cynicism and doubt, where material explanations are privileged over spiritual ones, Colton's simple declaration that heaven is for real offers something increasingly rare, a glimpse of hope beyond our immediate circumstances, and a reminder that even in our darkest moments, we might not be as alone as we feel. His story provides comfort not just in its promise of an afterlife, but in its assertion that we are known, loved, and remembered by a divine presence that transcends our earthly existence.